Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Welcome to another edition of Off Camera, the show where I get to talk to iconic, creative, curious artists and find out how they got that way. And in this episode, I sit down with actress, writer, and superhero Kristen Ritter. I was about 7 episodes into the Netflix series Jessica Jones when I sat down with her alter ego, Kristen Ritter. And as I was talking to her, a line from the show came back to me. Luke Cage, aka Power Man, tells Jessica, "If you don't feel good going to work, you should find new work." Well, Kristen is feeling pretty good about going to work these days, even if the schedule and responsibilities are a bit on the superhuman side. If you don't know her from her brief comic turn on Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23, you might know her from her heartbreaking, drug-addled arc on Breaking Bad. But you, along with millions worldwide, now know her best as Marvel's hard-drinking, butt-kicking, and extremely vulnerable superhero. I got the sense it's a role her whole life has prepared her to play. Isolated by a childhood move to the sticks and ridiculed for looking like a long-lost member of the Addams family, Kristen had a tough time fitting in. So she didn't try. She left school as soon as she could to pursue modeling, then acting, and never looked back. She earned her success without superpowers, unless you count hard work and perseverance. But these days, she struggles a bit to deal with that success. You can't blame her. She's one of the few actors at the forefront of shows that are changing how TV is made and marketed. I talked to Kristen about what she's learned on the journey to Jessica Jones and why she's loved every step of it. So pull up a chair and listen in. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for doing it.
Of course.
It's weird to have you here, actually, because I'm right in the middle of watching Jessica Jones, and I'm like 7 episodes in, which it's hard to keep up with all the television. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm 7 episodes in, so it's weird to see you here, and there's no blood.
No.
You're not drunk.
Nope.
I don't think.
No. And I got heels on.
You got heels on. Yeah, you're put together. You're calm.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing show. I want to talk all about it. I want to talk about other stuff you've done. But I have to ask you first. You told a story about how you put a post-it note on your refrigerator.
Yeah.
So can you just start by telling me that story?
Yeah. I've done this a couple of times. I've put something on my refrigerator and it ended up happening. And I don't want to sound like some crazy, like, new age witch lady.
Yeah, but you can have people, like, coming to your house to put things on
my fridge. And the other thing that I did it for took 10 years. But I really always wanted to work with Tim Burton since I started acting.
Yeah.
And I realized acting was a real job. So when I was growing up, I loved Tim Burton movies, but I didn't know acting was a real job. I didn't know anything. And then when I became an actress, I was like, oh, look at all these people that he cast in his movies. Like, I fit right in. I just related to his, like, strange and unusual, like, obsession with, like, the darkness and the larger than life and making it playful and kind of how he always focused on outsiders. So I was always obsessed with him and I'm still to this day. So I wrote it down on my little post-it. I've had it in my fridge. Like, I really want to work with Tim Burton. And I said it out loud to whoever would listen. I would call my agents all the time. And then finally, 10 years later, I got to work with him. So that worked. But that could be a fluke, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, you got the look.
But it worked the second time. I do. And I hope I get to work with him again. After Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23, which was this rad half-hour comedy that I did on ABC.
Yeah.
And I loved and had so much fun doing. After that, I was like, oh, my God, how am I gonna find something that's just as epic as this without, like, repeating myself? Because that show got canceled, and I started getting opportunities that were very similar.
Right.
Like, almost the same part, but not as good.
As that happens, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy that once you do something, people go, we either want to copy
it.
That
that's
because
what
that's what she does,
right.
Or that's all she can do.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. So, I like to work and I like to come out and play and I like to be funny, but I was like, I really want to do something so different. I love the shows that Netflix, they're putting out, mm-hmm. Orange is the New Black, all of them. Bloodline, House of Cards, all of them. I just love the content they were putting out. So I just wrote down on a piece of little paper, I want to do a dark, gritty, edgy show on Netflix. I stuck it up there and I think I even like took a different job before. It took a long time to finally like get that call about Jessica Jones. And I didn't have anything about superheroes.
Right.
And when they called me about this, they're like, okay, it's a Netflix show. Ding, ding, ding. Okay.
Wow.
But it's a superhero. And I'd never in a million years expected this show to be what it is. When you hear superhero, it's not really where your mind goes. But I was so lucky to get that opportunity.
Well, there's a strange power to writing something down, right? Where did you learn that, or where did that come from?
I don't know. But I do that. I write things down. I've noticed, like, when I get really busy and have, like, a lot on my plate and get, like, overwhelmed,
yeah,
it helps me just to make a list, like, okay, I have to do this. And just kind of go through it and check it off. It makes
right.
you feel, like, present and centered and in control of the chaos. So I've always kind of written things down. I've always, like, I haven't been shy about what I wanted to do or wanted to go after. And I don't know why. Like, when I was younger, I remember saying things like, I want to be a musician and an actress and a writer. And my friends would be like, are you crazy? Like, those are the three hardest things to do.
Yeah.
And that just never computed for me. So I was vocal about it. I wasn't afraid to sort of say what I wanted. And I guess that's kind of where that came from.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating when you think about, like, just the act of putting it out there. I do feel like there's a power to that. I think that if you can take yourself seriously, then you're way ahead of the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, when you were a kid, like before you knew acting was a profession,
mm-hmm.
How would you apply that logic to your life?
You know, I don't think I was until I figured out what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because I am from a very small town, and I never totally fit in. I mean, you know, look at me. I was like stuck out like a sore thumb. And the stuff on the lists of like career ideas like never really spoke to me.
Right.
So I didn't have like a thing. I didn't have something. I didn't have a plan until I was discovered at the mall. I was a model. And then that got me into commercials.
Right.
And that's when I was like, oh my God, like I finally figured it out. And just my whole life changed.
Well, it is interesting, those formative years when we're not a kid, but we're not an adult yet.
Yeah.
But we still have the brain of, okay, I'm my own person.
Yeah.
I always like to look at that and go, what traits did I have as a kid that now it makes sense that you're sitting here in this job? Like, do you ever look back and go, oh, yeah, it makes sense that I'm doing this now because...
Well, I grew up as an only child.
Okay.
So I have a sister, but she didn't come along until I was 15.
Yeah, that's an only child.
That's an only child.
Yeah.
But obviously, not really, because I have a sister. She's one of my best friends. But
she's crying right now.
Yeah. Love you, Bailey. Sorry. So I was, you know, probably a little like, hey, look at me. I'm over here. A little loud. I hear stories that I was very, like, silly and a lot, a handful.
Yeah.
You know, a little attention starved.
Well, you've been open about how... kind of you had some tough years, too.
Yeah.
I think I was reading a Rolling Stone piece, and you talked about not only the fact that your parents got divorced and that you had to move.
Yeah.
But also that, wasn't there, like, bullying going on at school?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, paint a picture of that girl.
Okay. So when I was little, I grew up in this little town with a couple of streets, like 1st, 2nd, and 3rd North Street.
Like a Mayberry.
Yeah, but smaller, but adorable. And then my parents got divorced when I was 12. My mom got remarried the summer before 7th grade.
Okay.
And where I was, when you go to 7th grade, like that's high school. You know, 7 through 12 was high school. Sometimes it's broken up.
Right.
And so I would have gone from walking across the street to school to walking like 2 blocks to school. My mom moves us to the sticks, and I had to like walk a mile to the bus stop. My first day of school at a new school. I'm like walking to the bus stop. I get on the bus, and I don't even know how these kids like had the time to think of it. But I got on the bus, and they sang the Addams Family song.
Really? Like together, not just
yeah,
one kid.
Not just one kid. I don't know. I was like.
I mean, also being that age, I can't imagine like dealing with that on top of moving and being
right.
a new kid.
And I think also where I was from and the time, like nobody really got divorced.
Oh, yeah.
You know, cut to 5, 6, 7 years later and now everybody gets divorced. But then it was kind of like a big deal.
Because it was such a small town, everybody knew each
town,
other.
Such a small town, everybody knew each other. Everybody knew, you know, all the dirt. And so that, there was like that stigma around
So
it.
How did you internalize that? Like how did that feel in terms of, you know, like, did you walk around, like, did it shatter your confidence or did it make you feel like an outsider?
You know, I just kind of like learned to entertain myself.
Yeah.
Because I went to like the Sticks, all of a sudden I had, you know, less to do.
So when you say the Sticks, was it like?
Completely like the rural Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Yeah. But I had animals all of a sudden. I had like, my mom got me a moped.
Oh yeah.
So I would like go for long drives on my moped and disappear and kind of just be in the woods a bit, or just go, I would go sit on like the hay feeder for the cows, go sit there and like interact with them. I would make like, you know, like forts out of hay and like jump
really?
Into it. Yeah, so it was.
But by yourself?
Oh, yeah,
not
I was by
like
myself
with a big
a lot.
Gang of kids.
No, I was by myself a lot. I remember never being the kind of kid who would get sucked into like peer pressure. I was always like fine to like do anything. Like I would stay out late. I would go out with the bad boys. I'd skip school. I was definitely like very adventurous.
Yeah.
I never remember having a lot of fear.
Do you think part of that is when your parents get divorced, all the rules sort of like change?
Yeah, everything does change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything does change. The dynamics change. Your household changes. You know, there's a lot of stuff. So I think I internalized a lot of and kind of started living in my own little fantasy world.
Right,
and
right.
Being a badass.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you tall at that point?
Yeah, I was
already.
Very tall.
So you got tall early.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was probably 5'8 by 13, 14. And I was so skinny and like just lanky, and I got picked on for it a
you
lot.
Did?
Oh, yeah.
So what is that? Like, how do you...
Well, it's bad for your confidence.
Yeah.
You think that how you look isn't good enough. You think how your look isn't right. Because you don't... The boys don't like you. Everything is about that. Like,
yeah.
You're not the pretty one. I remember feeling pretty shitty about myself.
Really?
Yeah. And then when I became a model, big shock.
Yeah.
My grandmother talked to me about this. She said that... She noticed a shift in my self-esteem.
Oh,
and
really?
I didn't feel like, oh, because now, like, that means I look better than I did 5 days ago before I was a model. It felt like I fit in. I had the girls that I related to
right.
who were also, like, kind of weird, who stuck out like sore thumbs. And I was young. I was 15 and 16 when I was doing this. So it's not like... When I say, like, I was a model, it's not like the world that you see now with, like, red carpets and fashion shows. It wasn't like that. It was, like, a totally different thing.
You were
it was
working
like
a, model.
I was a little kid, yeah.
Yeah. Well, is that the age in these small towns where, I mean, that's sort of the age kids get discovered, right? 15, 16, and...
Yeah.
That's so crazy to me. So you were, like, at a mall, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think of it almost like this spaceship thing where, you know, it comes down and... sucks you out of your small town and drops you in New York City.
It's pretty much, yeah.
Like, it's a different world. So,
it was so cool, though. I'm so grateful because it got me out of a situation where I would have probably gotten into trouble. Because,
how so?
Well, because I was, like, living in my own little world and, like, bored and didn't know what to do with myself and didn't have, like, a thing that was mine I was passionate about. I
right.
didn't have, like, a place to direct my energy. And it's a scary thing, I think, for kids. I don't know. You said you have daughters. I don't know how old they are. But when you're a teenager and it's coming time, you have to, like, choose where you want to go to college and choose what you want to do for the rest of your life. And if you don't know, I think that can be a really scary, dangerous place to be. And I've kind of thought about that more because my sister's 19 and just started college.
Right.
And just, like, kind of seeing her make those decisions. And it is. It's hard. It's hard to know who you are and what you want to do at that age.
And I would imagine you have a fairly small sample size in a small town like that, so.
Yeah, something rumor gets started about you, there's only 10 people that can go to, you know what I mean? It's just a lot.
Yeah, thank God it was pre-social media though, right?
Oh,
can you imagine
God.
The pressure?
I am so glad I didn't grow up with social media. Yeah. I am so glad I never had a cell phone. I got a cell phone when I was 18, because it was time. Because I was working, I was like, I guess I should go to the Sprint store and buy a cell phone. But. Even just when I was transported in the spaceship to different cities, I had to have a map. Like, I got a streetwise Manhattan map and figured out where to go and took the subway and just got I got a great education on how, like, cities work and how the streets are and how to get around. And I'm really grateful for that. Now, like, you're just walking around with your phone. Like, my sister, I feel bad. Like, she, you miss out on a lot of those like life experiences.
You
so
really
I'm so glad
do.
I didn't have a phone.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so when you were going to New York and you were in high school,
yeah,
would you travel there alone?
Yes. Yeah, so I would take...
Was it a train or was
bus.
It a plane? Oh, you would take a bus to New
yep,
York.
Yep, I was taking the bus, the Martz Railways bus. They left at like 5 in the morning. Could get there. It depended on the route, but I could get there in about 3 hours to Port Authority.
That must be a little bit crazy.
Yeah, like, totally
crazy. You're 15,
crazy.
You're on a bus.
Yeah.
And you're just showing up in Port Authority.
Yeah, ready to go to my modeling job.
Wow.
One time the Port Authority, I don't know if it was like the police or whatever, they stopped me and they thought I was a runaway.
Really?
I was like, no, really, I'm just here for work. They had to like call my parents and get, it was all this shit.
I wonder if that would happen
no,
today.
I'm,
that a 16-year-old, I just,
I don't know.
Kind of crazy.
I know.
And then would you stay in New York? Like, would they put you up and?
Yes. So if I had to stay over, I would stay at the model's apartment.
Okay.
If I went for long periods of time, I would stay at the model's apartment. But more often than not, like when I was still in high school, I would go up for the day and come back at night. So that's like 6 hours traveling.
Yeah, but even crazier is like all your friends are in high school.
Yeah.
And they're studying for their geometry test or whatever. And you're in a model's apartment in New York.
Yeah.
Like, did it change your perspective immediately on your high school?
Yeah. So I think it was the summer, maybe before 11th grade or maybe 10th, I'm not sure. I was sent to Japan.
Oh, really?
First time on an airplane. I went to Japan. I think right before then, they'd also cut my hair off. Super short.
Wow.
So and by the way, that can go either way in a small
yeah.
town, too.
Yeah, right.
So then I went to Japan. I did all this work, and I was in a commercial, and I lived by myself with one other girl in an apartment. I had, like, really fancy dinners and sushi and went to nightclubs and was working.
Right.
I went to Go-See's every day, and if I wasn't doing Go-See's, I had a job, and I had my little map, and I got there by myself, and I had to grow up so fast.
I can imagine.
Then going back, like, oh, now I'm just, like, not really an adult anymore. I was for 3 months, and now I'm going back to school.
But did that change your dynamic with your friends, too? Like, did it give you a wider perspective of the world where that stuff didn't matter as much? Or did you know you were just, like, on borrowed time and you were getting out?
I think a little bit of both, yeah. Definitely was like, oh, well, now I know what I'm doing. So I just have to, like, just do it
right.
until I'm 18 and then, you know. But I definitely felt like people would say things that weren't true, like, oh, Kristen thinks she's so cool now because she's a model. I'm like, no, I don't. I'm just still the same. It's you.
Isn't that funny? That
you know?
Maybe your first taste of what it's like to be famous in a way and have people think they know you and they don't.
Yeah, and it's like, so being famous, whatever, is like high school on crack.
It is.
And you gotta just like figure out a way to not let it bother you. And sometimes it's really hard.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're like, oh my God, what have I got myself into? But you also, you have thick skin, you really have to rise above it.
Well, you had a funny quote. I think it was a podcast, and you said that modeling taught you resilience because you just get shit on so often. And what I'm hearing is like, okay, you go off and it's this amazing life, right?
Right.
And it's so much more full and cultured than your high school. But then all of a sudden you realize it's also horrible
right.
in some
right.
ways.
Yeah, I think everything prepares you for what's coming next.
Yeah.
And modeling for sure made me... have thick skin and not take things personally, you're reduced to, like, how you look. You can't take that personally. And it would be like, oh, you know, her thighs, you know, whatever. Their thighs could be a little thinner for runway. Okay, well, that's work. That's business stuff. I'm never like, oh, they don't like me. Like,
right.
I was exposed so young, it was just, like, a part of it. I didn't show up and was like, oh, this really hurts my feelings. I just showed up like, oh, that's how it is? Okay.
Right.
I was kind of rolling with it and growing along with it.
Yeah.
But it made me have a great work ethic. It made me take everything really seriously, work hard. Also, I got audited when I was 18 years old. So
you did?
Yeah. So I had to learn about money.
That's
and
weird,
learn how to like audit taxes.
A kid.
Yeah, well, it was like a year that they were just kind of cracking down on like people that got 1099s in New York.
Right.
And what happens is like the agency pays you your check after, like, all they take out all their expenses for all your pictures and all your books and your model's apartment, and then you get, like, nothing.
You get 20 bucks.
No shit.
Yeah.
You get nothing, and you're like, well, your 1099 says you made this much. And so I got audited. it was fine. Nothing bad happened. But I was like, oh my God. So I had to get in there and like understand and sit with an accountant and like figure out what was going on. And I didn't know anything at that time. I'm a kid. So it taught me a lot about like taxes. Boring stuff.
Yeah, but it sounds like you created your own life lessons. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't sound like you had parents that sat you down and said, here's how you do your
taxes. Nobody told me.
Ran into it.
Yeah, exactly. So, and at the time, it was so scary. But I'm so grateful. You know, I don't have a business manager. I do everything myself.
Really?
I'm very hands-on with everything.
Did you have money as a kid growing up?
Fuck no, not even close.
I think if you don't have money, you never sit your kids down and teach them how to manage money.
Exactly.
Which is sort of counterintuitive. Like, it seems like that would be a good thing to do.
Right. Well, I did learn valuable lessons like waste not, want not.
Yeah.
We don't have like, there's not a whole bunch of this. And every penny saved, you know, is a penny earned. And I really understood the value of working hard and to have money to buy if you want to buy things. I didn't get handed anything. But, you know, I always had a fear that when I got to New York, if I ran out of money, I would be so screwed. I would be on the side of the road. There was nobody to help me.
You couldn't call home.
I can't call home and ask for anything. They don't have it, you know? There was nobody that I could have called if I got into trouble. So the option was don't get into trouble.
It must have made you grow up fast, right?
Oh, for sure.
But did it also, like, give you this sense of independence? Like, oh, I'm responsible for this.
Yeah.
So when did you realize acting was a profession that you could do?
When I started going out for commercials, because modeling was like, a lot of people start out as models. It's
right.
Just like that extra step.
But up until then, it didn't cross your mind. You were like, oh, I'm going to be an actor.
And no. It wasn't until someone put me in a room and was like, oh, this is what I have to do to get a job because I can do that. I was learning. It was like I was always getting on the job training.
Right.
And I was always eager. I was always a sponge. I'm still like that. And kind of just learning as I went along. Figuring out what I liked and what I didn't like.
I think when you're young and you're trying to do something, it almost feels like, oh, I'll just trick them into hiring me.
I still feel like I've tricked people.
How did you get in here?
How did I get into this room right now? I've tricked a lot of people.
Well, I tricked people to get this room.
Right.
So it's a whole house of cards.
Yeah, but I think everybody feels that way a little bit.
Yeah.
I think we're all tricking people.
But when you were doing it for the first time, when you got sent on these commercial auditions,
yeah.
Were you sort of like always sort of checking the reactions and going, oh, that worked and that didn't?
Yeah, you know, when I first started going to these commercial auditions, there was like, based on your personality and being silly. And luckily, like, I knew how to do that.
Right.
And I wasn't afraid. I was kind of obnoxious. I'd pull my dress over my head to get a laugh.
But I think also that if it isn't your sole purpose in life to be something, maybe you don't have that smell of desperation on you either. Like, maybe you're able to do that because it was like, oh, I just want to get this job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need them to like me and think I'm an actor. You know what I mean?
You know, Bryan Cranston talks a lot about, like, the audition process. And
oh, yeah?
You're not going in to try and get the job. You're going in to do what you do great. And that's me, like, totally boiling it down and paraphrasing Bryan Cranston, which I shouldn't do because he's amazing. But he said that, he talks about that a lot. He said that to me when I met him years ago. And I, like, really, that spoke to me in a really huge way. And I've kind of, like, hung on to that. I'm like, oh, yeah. You just got to do you, right?
Some people don't learn that until they're a lot older.
And there's a lot of obstacles along the way trying to, like, stop you from doing that. Remember, like, when I was, like, in acting classes in New York, I mean, yeah, I'm a spaz, and I'm super quirky, and I talk really fast. And everyone was trying to get me to stop doing all of those things.
Right.
And well, that's how I booked all my jobs when I started at the beginning. It's like, oh, well, that's working, so. and it wasn't like I was trying to do anything. I was just being me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I watched that with other people, too. Like, sometimes you come out the other end of these serious acting programs maybe without that thing that made you super cool, without that thing that made you, like, kind of different.
Well, that's the balance, right? Like
right.
trying to gain technique without losing instinct.
Yeah, which is important. I bounced around a lot from different, like I studied like Uta Hagen method, and then I did a Meisner program for 2 years, and then now I work with the same teacher who's Stella Adler based forever and ever. But all of those little pieces, and then a lot of on the job training, yeah. a lot of observation. I take a little bit of everything.
I think a lot of people, when they start getting work, they maybe don't study as much, or you know what I mean? It sounds like you have a plan. Like, it doesn't sound like you were just like, oh, I'm getting these jobs, so I'll just do what I do.
No, I want to be
better.
Want
to learn.
Yeah, I want to learn. I want to be better. You do get a lot of great on the job training, and it's a different thing that they don't teach you in school. Like, they don't teach you like how to hit your mark. Like,
right.
it's really important. You have to hit your mark, and if you show up and you don't know how to hit it, people, you know, you kind of slow down the day.
Yeah.
People get pissed. your two jobs are to know your lines and hit your mark.
Well, you've talked a lot about having an acting teacher and working with
yeah.
her, and I think you even lived at her house once.
I did.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's commitment.
Well, she was really looking out for me. I first came to LA to do like groundwork and pilot season and all of that, and was living in a pretty shitty situation in Los Feliz. And kind of had enough. I had an allergic reaction to LA. Now I love it. And I also
oh, you did.
Yeah, it didn't wasn't a great thing for me. I got really lonely. And I wasn't booking jobs right away. So I came from New York, I was like working consistently, come to LA and no one gives a shit.
So you
even like
in
get
your
a commercial.
Apartment
yeah, or and then you drive to your audition and you're by yourself. You do your thing, you get back in your car, and you know, in New York all this life happens to you all the time.
Yeah.
After three, it was really romantic for the first 3 months to have this, like, isolation, read books and, you know, whatever. So then I was like, okay, I'm good, I'm done, I'm going to go home. I booked a plane ticket, of course, I booked a pilot. I told my acting teacher what was going on, and she was like, what? She sent one of her students to go pick up my dresser, the only thing I owned, this IKEA dresser.
Oh, you told her you were lonely? And
I know, I told her that I was in a bad situation in Los Feliz.
Oh, okay. So you had a bad living
yeah,
situation.
Yeah, bad living situation. Okay. I had moved in with strangers.
Oh, another thing that,
yeah,
I mean, all
happens.
These things that, like, parents, you know, it's so scary to think, like, oh, yeah, my daughter's just out there, and she
right.
met some strangers, and she's, it's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't have that fear, though, because I was young and
yeah.
stupid. So I told Marjorie what was going on, and she sent one of her students to go pick up my dresser, and I went and stayed at her house while I shot the pilot.
Wow.
And so she's been with me for so long, and you know, relationships are hard to maintain for a long time. And she's just one of those people that I identified her quickly as a mentor and as a figure that I was going to learn a lot from. And we have grown together and evolved in a great way. And it's an important relationship to me.
Yeah. What is it about her process that
she is fierce?
Struck.
She is fierce.
Yeah.
She doesn't put up with any bullshit. She doesn't care that I have my own show, and she doesn't care. She's never cared. She didn't like Don't Trust the Bee, and I loved it. She does not care.
Oh, she didn't like
She's
it.
Not impressed. No.
And when you come and you say, I got this part, here's this scene.
Yeah.
What can she do that you can't do for yourself?
It's another set of eyes. It's that support.
Right.
It's the time spent on it. It's if I'm working with her, that is 4 hours. You know, that, of course, I work on my own, and then I bring to her and we talk about it. She's always going to find something. Two heads are better than one.
Yeah.
She's always going to find something I missed. Sometimes, like, we'll be at the end, like, well, kind of the same I came in with, whatever. And it's just, like, spending that kind of real time on something.
Right.
We have, like, this thing, like, we both are kind of love to talk about acting. Love to break down scenes.
So you love the craft.
Yeah. And I love, like, and so does she, and we just get fired up, and we're like, she's like one of the strongest, coolest, most badass women. She's got big ideas, and she just fires me up.
God, you know, it's amazing. Like, that's what you want in life, especially
yeah.
as an artist, I think. So much of the stuff, so much of the pain and the prep and stuff, it is an isolated type of experience. It has to
you're,
be.
You're right.
You get in your own head.
It really is, and I think that it helps me to have somebody who's kind of like in it with me, because I'm not going to like talk to my whatever, my girlfriend or my boyfriend, like, oh, in this scene, like this moment that happened, like really I had a hard time bouncing back from. With Marjorie, I can be like, oh my God, that scene, and she's like,
yeah.
oh, I bet, you know? It's so in it with me
you've sort of hit all the steps, right? You got discovered as a model, you transitioned to commercials, you started getting
little jobs,
little things, and then supportings, and then recurrings, even to the point of, at some point, you were being called the new Judy Greer or something, right? The new, you were getting the best friend roles.
Yeah.
But that whole time that was happening, did you have a bigger plan in mind? Like, were you always thinking like, okay, I want to be at this place, and I'm doing it one step at a time.
I definitely noticed the one little baby step at a time.
Yeah,
thing.
And you really have sort of not missed a step, in an endearing way. I mean, you've sort of not.
I'm just hustling.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, of course, when it's happening, you're like, oh, I just want to get that big thing. It never happened. It never happened that like I got a big thing and my life changed. It's just been like baby steps and progression. And I'm so grateful for that because that makes you ready for the next thing.
Well, okay, so I loved you in Breaking Bad.
Thank you. That was such a good show.
Well, you played that role in a way that I thought really communicated how people are adults and little kids at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that this poor girl ran into Jesse Pinkman's circle when she was, 6 months sober or something. Mm-hmm. But it never I feel like you never lost a certain innocence as hard as you also were on that. That it made it really, really terrifying for me as a father.
Right.
You know? And that's when I really kind of took notice of you. I'd seen you in a lot of other things, but it was just astonishing work.
Yeah, it's the writing, you know what I mean? And you're only as good as the people you're surrounded with. And that cast, obviously, next level, the writing was great. They had great directors. I was so lucky to have that opportunity.
I wonder if going through that process changed your acting or your approach to acting at all.
I remember, loving it. I had done a couple of arcs on other shows and wasn't totally sure that I liked the sort of form, the long-form television.
Oh, really?
I was figuring it out. And then I did Breaking Bad. I was like, oh, this is cool. I would love to do a show like this. I would love to, keep playing a cool character like that. And I just kind of watched how Aaron and Brian were enjoying their experience and the crew and how that all worked. And I sort of came out of that being like, oh, it'd be really cool to do a television show.
Yeah.
To, be on a show all the time.
God, isn't that amazing? And you also, I know you've talked about almost not taking Breaking Bad, right? Or having another job?
No, I definitely wanted to do Breaking Bad. I had another job that was offered to me.
Okay.
And I had Bird in Hand, and Breaking Bad hadn't made their decision yet. And the other thing had a clock on it. And I risked losing both jobs, you know?
That's the thing about this world, that you know, we're all in it. At a certain point, you get in that situation where there's the job you want and the job that's sitting there that you know you can do.
That you can do, it would have been the same.
Same money.
No, it would have been more money. But, but it would have been the same thing you've seen me done before.
Right, right. So what made you pick the harder one for less money?
I liked the show. I watched the first 7 episodes.
Yeah.
That was all that they had made at that point. And I thought it was cool. I honestly, and it was on this a network I didn't know about. I'm just doing pilots for networks. I don't know. And I didn't even care if anybody ever saw it.
That's sort of the line for craft, I think. If you're in this because you love your work, then you just can't find enough roles, right? That are great. Like that's
you
the
can't
goal.
Find enough roles that are good. No,
especially
it's hard
as
to
a
find
woman,
great.
I would think
yeah.
too.
It's hard to find great, great, great things. Also, you have to, as you become more known. If you do something, it'll get more attention. So you have to be kind of careful how you choose. And that's a new thing for me. I've never been in that situation before. It's hard. It's a lot of pressure. But then you look at something and you're like, okay, so this will take me away from home. This will, you want it to do something different. You want to be good. You want to have an opportunity to show something you haven't done before. And it's material that speaks to you. It is really hard. And I don't know why. I don't know why it's so hard to find great parts.
And people want to put you in a box, too, right?
Totally.
I mean, I would think that you could paper an office with, you know, offers of things that
quirky
were exactly
sidekicks.
What...
quirky sidekicks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at one point, do you have to actually say, okay, I'm going to start saying no more often to get where I want. Like, I'm going to take a dip to get where I want. Did you have to go through that mindset?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And that was always, like, a weird thing. Because I just want to, I just like to work. I mean, it doesn't matter. I just like good material. I want to be challenged. I want to have great parts. I'm doing a movie starting, like, next week, a supporting role with Sam Elliott. Because it's good scenes. Good scenes. I don't care if it's the lead or not. I love Sam Elliott. Like, it doesn't matter where you find good material.
Right.
I just want to, like, do good scenes with another actor and be challenged and get to play.
That's a good way to talk about Jessica Jones, because when you commit to something like that, if it doesn't turn out the way that either they're telling you it's going to turn out or
yeah,
whatever, you could be on something that defines you.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I think there's as much risk and opportunity as there is in you know, not having a job.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think you have to really think long and hard about signing on to a television show.
Yeah.
I never questioned for a second Jessica Jones is going to be good.
So when you got the audition, you wanted it. Did you have to find out like the intention of who this character was going to be?
Yeah, a little bit of both. When I first got the information, it was incorrect. So I was like, whatever, I'll go. It'll be fun, but I'm never going to get it.
What do you mean the information is
incorrect? Well, my manager called and he was like, "Oh, they're doing this superhero show at Netflix. I love Netflix.
Yeah.
I'm happy to go. Superhero, I'm never going to get that." And he was like, "Oh no, she's a superhero, but she's really bad at it." So my mind just went to like, I don't know, like Super
Kraft
Ex-Girlfriend
and,
or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And then I got the material and she was like really drunk and a lot of backstory, a lot of stuff, really, a lot of seeds planted in the sides. Just in I think I maybe had between 5 and 8 pages. My specialty. and there was so much in there, so many layers. I was like, oh, this is good. This is not what I expected.
Do you remember the scene that was the audition?
Yeah, it was the scene with Luke Cage in the bar.
Okay.
And the scene with her best friend Trish, played by Rachel Taylor, when she shows up and was like, he's back. And I didn't know what was going on in that scene. I was like, are they ex-lovers? Are they? There's so much there. And I'm talking about this guy being back, and I don't even know who this guy is yet. So I have to just like create all this stuff. So even just the audition was a challenge and fun. Then I met with Marvel and Melissa Rosenberg.
Yeah.
And then I read the first two scripts, and I was like, give it to me. Give it to me now.
And at that point, was there more audition process?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there was.
Yeah, and then I did a screen test.
Oh, you did.
And then I was like, okay, I'm going to go on a little vacation. It was Thanksgiving. I should have known, and they should have known by the time I got back. And they said, you have to come and screen test again.
Really? So there had to have been another actor that was like, they were really looking at it too.
No, I think they just wanted to, other actors were in there.
Yeah.
Talk to them now, and they just say it was always me. But who knows? What else are they going to tell you?
Exactly.
But they had Mike Coulter and I read together.
Okay.
So he and I were in this whole thing from the beginning.
Do you want that worse than anything ever in your career once you got down the process of it?
I did. I wanted it pretty bad.
Yeah.
I wanted it pretty bad. It was torture.
It was.
It was torture. It went on for like 2 months.
Really?
Yeah.
Marvel doesn't mess around. They're like, we are going to make sure we have the right person.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what it was. And so while it was torturous, I still felt because I survived that, I earned it.
Right.
I had every reason to be there. I could be confident. Yeah, but they, you know, Jessica Jones is also part of like this bigger project. It was picked up for 13 episodes plus the Defenders.
Did you know all that when you?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Oh yeah. So I knew like this was like, oh, if I get this job, this is a big commitment. That means you're going to go straight to work immediately. You're going to put on 10 pounds of muscle, work every single day, and then go promote it around the world. And then like also do the Defenders. It was a whole thing. So imagine that week leading up to finding out, am I just going to be here for Christmas? Am I going to, what am I going to do? Am I going to just go to another audition? Or am I going to go to New York and make this thing?
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, your whole life, and not only that, but as you're doing that, you can't commit to anything else.
Am I going
to
be moving across the country?
Right.
Yeah.
So cut to first day on set, or let's say first month on set.
Yeah.
Tell me about like the length of the days and the length of the shoot. Like, because basically, for people who don't know, this is a 13-hour movie on Netflix, and it all comes out at once, obviously. So no one knows anything what's going on. There's no build. It's you just make it all in a bubble.
Yeah.
Right? So compare that a little bit to the B in 23.
There's
and
really
you're doing
no
a half
comparison.
Hour thing. I mean, just in terms of time and effort and isolation.
Okay. There is no comparison. Because the B, I never felt isolated. We didn't work crazy, crazy, crazy hours. We worked like normal television hours, maybe 12 hours a day.
Right.
You know, once in a while longer, once in a while shorter. But I was always with James Vanderbeek or Dreama. You know, it was like a really contained, small, funny, light, bright thing. Yeah. And also material's light and funny and you're giggling all day.
Right.
You're
not fighting.
Not fighting. You're not like really like living in a dark place. And then I felt totally isolated. It was all by myself the first month. And I was like, oh, wow, this is serious. Because
yeah.
it's Marvel and it's Netflix and it's a big thing. And so you feel like that pressure and you're in every scene and someone's following you all the time. And for me, I mean, I'm there 2 hours before the crew. But then, like, there's people in the crew that are there even after we wrap, the poor Teamsters. It's a grind. A one-hour television with stunts and heavy drama like that is definitely a big thing.
It's the hardest thing, right?
I think so. I think it's hard. But I love the pace of it because it's so you get into it. It's a machine. You get in and you go along with the ride, and it's crazy energy.
Yeah.
And you kind of just feed off of that, and you just like show up, and because it also moves really quickly, you bring your A game. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to do something 10 takes
right.
to be able to find it. I'm going to nail it in one or two, maybe three, so that we can make our day.
So how many pages do you do a day on that?
Some days we would do 5, and some days, I remember some days we would do 10.
Wow.
It depends on what was going on. You know, if there's a stunt happening that day, maybe just that.
Right.
But if it's, like, just maybe in the apartment, we'll probably do, like, 2 scenes before lunch, 2 scenes after lunch.
What would no one suspect or ever understand unless they actually did your job?
The hardest thing, I think, for my family and friends or whatever to really understand are definitely the hours.
Yeah.
Because I'll say things like, oh, I wish we could just work like a 12-hour day today. Like, 12-hour day? Are you crazy? Like, well, that would be totally manageable. I think the hardest thing for people to understand is the weekend turnaround. Oftentimes, if Friday nights, you work into Saturday morning, right?
Yeah.
And then Monday, you're getting picked up at the same time that you got home on Saturday. So it's
wow.
really hard on your
so
body.
You get Sunday.
You get Sunday to sleep.
Yeah.
Or like just being fried. So it's really hard for your body to adjust. And that's one thing. You have to take really good care of yourself. You have to eat really well. You have to exercise. You have to treat it like you're like an athlete. It prepared me for the schedule and stunts, obviously. But
Had you ever done stunts and
never.
All that? Never.
No. And I was like accidentally hitting people. Because I'd have no experience.
That brings up an interesting question about, like, if you're someone who's used to a certain kind of acting that comes mostly from your brain, and then you have to be physical, did you have to almost relearn or learn for the first time some ways to act while being
no.
physical? Or does it become instinctual?
It was so instinctual because I just was so focused on, like, Jessica and where she was and that everything, I just got into her skin. It didn't
right.
ever feel like a different muscle. It just felt like her.
It didn't?
Uh-uh. I loved it.
And there wasn't a learning curve on how do you shoot
for
a master
sure.
and then how
no,
do you...
No, because it all works the same way like a real scene would. But there's like gags and effects and potentially dangerous things. So you have to learn. It's like learning a dance or something.
Did it make the hours go by quicker? Too?
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember my first stunt scene was a scene in the bar and there was a bar fight. And we were shooting that, I think, at like 2 a.m. It didn't feel like it at all.
Really?
Yeah, because it's so much adrenaline.
Yeah, I bet.
One
yeah.
of the most fun things I've done was that first bar fight scene.
Why is that?
Because I'd never punched anybody before. I'd never, like, thrown somebody over a bar. I, like, ripped a telephone out of a wall and, like, smacked a guy in the face with it. Accidentally, really did.
Did you actually hit him?
Yeah. They didn't use that take, though.
Yeah, it seems like you get to do everything on that show. Like, it's dark and it's psychological. And there's all these quiet moments in your apartment.
Yeah,
you're drinking, and you can sort of like chew off a big character chunk.
So much,
and then
stuff.
Yeah, you get to like leap off buildings.
I know it's a. I can't honestly. I can't think of a other show I would want to be on.
Are you dreading going back just because of the hours, though?
No, because I think that that'll, you know, the first seasons are always harder because you have to establish a world. And I think that by the end, we established a bigger, you know, ensemble. And I think it'll, it's just going to run so much smoother.
Yeah.
Everyone's in a groove. I also now know what I'm going into. Last season, my training was condensed into 2 months because that's all I had. So I kind of showed up beat up.
Oh, right, right.
So now I have a little bit longer to train.
It sounds like I'm talking to an athlete who's got to stay in shape in the off season.
It is like that. Luckily, I have a little bit of time to, and I've had time in promoting the show to sort of think about it and talk about it in different ways, and that gets you like revved up again.
Yeah.
That you want to go back and do it.
So how has your life changed since it came out?
It's definitely made my world a little smaller because more people recognize me, and that's a weird thing to get used to.
So was there was a big shift even after the other even after the network stuff and Breaking Bad?
I felt like I was recognized a lot before Jessica Jones, and Marvel like kind of sat me down. They're like, it's going to change, and I was like, that's not true. Everything will be fine. But it has changed.
So what's an example of that on a different scale than what you experienced before?
Well, you know, kind of like if you go somewhere, you can kind of count on something happening.
So there's no more just, you can't just go out to a...
I feel that way because I feel the pressure of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure I can go do anything. If I go to the grocery store, like I'm sure somebody will ask me for a picture.
Oh, really?
And I think it's just the picture culture now. And I think like there's been so many experiences recently where someone like wants a picture and I'll give it to them. I was like, I was just thinking like their experience could have been so much more fun if I could have talked to them.
Right.
I would have like talked to them and gotten their name. Instead, it's just everyone just wants a picture.
I think that's really odd. It's like a commodity and they check a box that they got a picture with you or something, you know?
But that said, like if I run into, like I wish I had like a picture with Amy Schumer, you know what I mean? And I feel like an asshole for not getting one. But, you know, so I get it. It's just a weird thing. I'm just from a farm in Pennsylvania. So when, it's a lot to process.
And you have to learn how to handle it, right?
Yeah. And I, it's just part of that thing we were talking about before. You got to like have just thick skin and let it, not think about it and just as part of it. But it just wasn't part of it when I started acting.
Right.
So it's just a lot more pressure.
And, you know, in terms of the Marvel brand, too, you don't want to go out and, you know, punch kids in the face when they ask you for a picture.
No, you want to give everybody something. Yeah. You want to give everybody a piece of yourself. And sometimes, yeah, sometimes that's easier than it is on other days, you know. It's so weird. I never could have anticipated the hugeness of the show.
Right.
I'm so lucky because I love the show. It's so rare to be on something that everything just lines up. The casting was right. The writing is great. The marketing was really good. Netflix did a really good job with the marketing.
Yeah.
And then it got reviewed well, and then audiences like it. That doesn't happen ever.
And so you get to go do it again.
And I get to do it again. So I'm totally stoked. But I definitely feel in my personal life, I definitely feel much more guarded. I definitely feel like pressure. I definitely feel like sometimes it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
I feel like scared sometimes. I don't feel like if I'm out in public, I'm like being my true self. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My social circle now is like smaller.
And that must be hard because no one can understand what that feeling of being anonymous is until you don't have it anymore.
It's just a weird thing that you don't really get prepared for.
Right. How can you prepare for it?
And when you feel like you've tricked all these people to get the job in the first place, then you're like, shit. Shit.
I think
people
that is
can
a common
see me.
Thing. Yeah.
When I watch actors that I love and I see them like super relaxed in interviews and I see them just like being awesome and living their life, I'm like, how do they do that?
Yeah.
How do they do that? How are they not nervous as fuck? How are they, like, how do they just act like it's real? Like, it's, how do they do it? Is it me? Am I just like, actually not good at, I don't know. Am I not good at it? Am I like, have I tricked everybody? I'm not cut out for this. I don't know. So, and maybe it's just you get better. This is all very new for me.
Yeah. So, were you nervous doing this?
I'm nervous for everything, but I feel like this is a relaxed environment. This is, isn't it bad? Nobody knows this, but there's not a huge audience.
Yeah, no.
So, yeah, no, I get pretty nervous for most things.
You do.
Especially talk shows.
Well, those are just the weirdest thing in
yeah,
the world,
those
right?
Are a live lot of audience. Pressure. And, live audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always thought that I was going to, like, faint or throw up. There have been times
really?
Where I actually thought I was going to faint, and I was thinking to myself, like, I'm going to have to tell this host right now that I got to go.
Really? Like, you've pulled the ripcord. You might have to,
I never have gone down. I don't
what
know
what is
why.
That like? I mean, is it like an out-of-body experience?
Out-of-body.
Really?
Yeah. Your hearing gets a little like, wah, wah. This is the nerves. It's like panic. It's like a panic attack.
On
national television. That's what happens to me every single time.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what? I bet that's more common than I would think. You know, the funny thing about being a human is you think your experience is totally unique.
Yeah.
And then if you really talk to somebody, mm-hmm. you find out that everyone feels the same way. Like, I bet if you sat down and took 20 actors in their early 30s
right.
and asked them, I bet you'd find out.
I should do that.
You should
conduct a little survey, start a little support group for.
Maybe it would, like, make you go, okay, this is normal.
It's normal.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Now that Jessica Jones is like this worldwide thing, that like, how do you balance the success that you make, right?
I'm just along for the ride. I just want to like keep working and find good parts.
But have you found that
since
this has happened, the opportunities have multiplied?
Yeah, so that's really cool.
Because I would think you'd want to be like, I have to take this and go here.
No, it's a little bit of both. Like, I definitely... 3 years ago, I would have been like, God, let's find something. Let's cram this 3 months that I have. Now I'm like, okay, I need to like take care of myself. I got to rest.
Yeah.
Recharge my iPhone battery. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to update to the latest software.
Right. Yeah. You got to like put stuff back in.
Yeah.
I got to read books. I have been reading a lot of books. And I got to like go to museums and go see movies. Because when you're doing a show, I'm so focused on what I'm doing. That's kind of it. And... so I want to like use this opportunity and maximize my time and have a good balance too.
It's a strange thing to be so busy that there's actually not room for anything.
Right.
But like, do you ever notice that like you're just not on your phone for a whole day?
Right.
Or you're not returning emails for a whole day because you can't. Does that change things a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's hard at first because there's so many things that you want to do and keep up with, and then you're like, but you just gotta let it go. And when I stopped putting that pressure on myself, I'm like, oh, okay, if I work a really long day, it's okay that I'm like behind on other things. That's fine.
Yeah. Is part of your learning process learning how to deal with pressure? Because it seems
yes.
like every time you get to a level, there's another level of pressure and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is for sure self-imposed.
Are you someone that can put a lot of
pressure?
Because
I want to do good. I want to be good. I want the show to come out and not be good in it, you know?
Yeah.
But I definitely put a lot of pressure on myself, and figuring out how to handle it is part of the process. It's part of the learning process for sure.
Well, you're in the situation that no actor's ever had to be in before this, you know, these last few years. You're on a worldwide television show. It all comes out in one day. It's 13 hours of intense work.
It's a totally
work.
New thing.
There's social media to deal with and
worldwide
promotion to deal with. I mean, I don't think anyone's ever, before the last couple of years, dealt with a phenomenon like this where there's so much responsibility and so much transparency and connection to people that people feel like they can get right to you through social media. And
right.
It seems like it's a hugely pressurized world.
Yeah, I mean, and the traveling and all of that to promote the show is sometimes like you're in a different time zone and got to go straight to the thing
and still be
like funny and adorable.
Well, you're doing a good job at that.
I try to be.
You are adorable and funny.
I get energy from my ankles.
From your ankles?
Yeah, all of them. Just suck it up.
Really?
Whatever. Yeah.
You know,
you got to dig deep for the energy. Yeah.
Yeah, right down to the ankles.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing this with me.
And thank you for having me.
For taking some of your free time. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me. It's really fun.
Hey folks, that's our show. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join me next time when I sit down with actor, comedian, and improv expert, Keegan-Michael Key.
In our industry, it's always just a series of challenges. Do you look at the challenges as opportunities, or do you look at the challenges as problems? It doesn't matter if you're in a $50 million comedy or you're doing a play at a 60-seat black box. You're an artist, you're a craftsman, and you're putting your tools together to tell a clear, concise, and hopefully moving story. That's all that should matter.
As half of the sketch duo Key and Peele, he hilariously took on race, stereotypes, and President Obama's anger issues. And with his new film, Don't Think Twice, he takes on his own past, playing the lead in a troupe of improvisational actors trying to make it to the next level. It's a fascinating look at what the world of improv is really all about. And funny enough, it's a drama about comedy. I'll see you next time, off camera.